The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2017 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2017. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Okay, well, welcome. I want to make sure everyone can hear me in the back. I have a fan blowing right here in my ear, so I feel like I have to talk a lot louder to hear myself. So in the back, you can hear me fine? Great. Nodding heads. Thumbs up. Thank you. Well, welcome. My name is Michelle Jones. I'm from the other coast. I'm from Washington State. And I have been head of school for going on 11 years. And since third grade, I wanted to be a teacher. I did not ever anticipate being a head of school. So when I started this journey, the shoes were really big, and I felt like I didn't quite fit in them for a while. So my teacher evaluations reflected that. And as we know, our teachers are responsible for evaluating students. And you know, when you went to teacher college, you learned how to evaluate students really well. And being in the head of school position, and I'm founder and head of school, so there's a lot of forging new territory that goes with that. So as I was doing that, then I am now thrust into evaluating teachers and a lot of trial and error. And at one point I felt like I really need to learn more specifically how to evaluate my teachers, how to do this job better. And I found out I went to a program at Seattle Pacific University, and phenomenal teachers in the administrative credential program there, and really got a firmer grasp. Actually learned that I really did actually know quite a bit more than I thought I did, and that was reassuring. And so some of the things I'm going to share with you today are my trial and error pieces, but also from the experiences that I had from learning specifically from people that were in education for 30 plus years. And those people were such a vast wealth of knowledge for me. So I would love for you to email me. It's at the top of everyone's pages, but I am welcoming that. I love sharing resources, and I've just been coordinating with the people in Western Washington, and we've created a network amongst us that there's about five or six schools, and we just say, hey, how are you doing this? Can you share this resource and those pieces? That's why I said this is a practical workshop for administrators instead of a theoretical or philosophical, because I want you to walk out with tools and know-how, and if the pieces that I'm sharing with you make sense and that you like them, I would love to share with you the originals in Word form so that you can actually use them. So please email me and ask for those resources. All right, so quote here for you, for teachers, as for students, the most effective evaluation comes from someone who sits beside us and helps us grow. So for me, my leadership style is collaborative, and I also expect my teachers to work collaboratively with their teachers, but my role often looks like coaching. So how many of you are doing teacher evaluations or have done one at least? Okay. How many love your process? Okay, you're in the right spot. This is my process that I've come to love, and I will tell you there are many different processes, but I am a collaborator and I am a coach, and those are the pieces that I find help my teachers be most successful. If I were to be a top-down administrator, somebody who says this is the way it is and this is how you're doing it, this would not work very well, because I like to be right alongside my teachers and helping them walk through. So we're going to walk through a couple different ideas here. So here's one of my teachers. You might have seen her lovely face around. She is joyful. She has a can-do attitude. She's optimistic. She's very efficient. She really embraces excellence, and she is passionate. These are qualities I'm looking for, and that's what I value in a teacher. But how do you evaluate those things on paper? That's what we're going to talk about today. So what is it that you value in a teacher? You really need to know your mission statement. So for me, Cornerstone Academy is a classical Christian school that is student-centered, transparent, supported, notice that keyword, and powered by passionate educators. So I have five keys that I'm looking for. So how many of you know your mission statement by heart? Okay. If you don't know your mission statement by heart, it either A, is a mission statement that you can stand behind, or B, it's not driving you. So think about your mission statement for your school, or if you have a mission statement for your job, you need to have something that you're standing behind, something that motivates you to do what you're doing. So those are the five keys that I follow when I am evaluating, when I'm making a financial decision. I could do many more workshops on how that mission dictates what I do. But we're talking about teacher evaluation today. So what do I value in a teacher? I'm looking for a teacher who's passionate, someone who's going to be working towards classical education, somebody that reflects Christian education, somebody that involves parents so that parents are supporting, because that's part of our mission, somebody who makes students the center. Those are our five mission statement goals. So that's what I'm looking for when I'm evaluating. So what are yours? What are your focuses? What do you want your teachers to look like? One of the things, as we're here, we're talking about classical education, and there's lots of buzzwords, right? There's truth, beauty, goodness. Well, how do you evaluate that, right? Qualities of classical education, what are the aesthetics of the classroom? I was hearing a speaker earlier, and that is such a beautiful way to capture a classroom aesthetically. But is that something that you're looking for? And how? What is it that you're looking for when you're in a classroom? For me, when I walk into a classroom, I think of myself as a thermometer. And I walk in and I'm going to be the thermometer. I'm going to stand there for just a couple minutes and kind of soak in and take the classroom climate. And that's how I describe it to the teachers. Just, I'm going to just kind of soak in for a few minutes, and I just want to see how things are going. So I'm looking at, for example, I walk into this classroom. Let's say I walk in and this is the first thing I see. I'm going to notice a couple things. My teacher's smiling. That's a great sign. She's up. She's moving. She's using technology. She is, she's actually getting ready for our parent orientation this evening. I also know that she was teaching about explorers. So you notice some oars behind her on the wall. She has some nautical themed pillows in the back, and her student library is underneath her, and it was in really good working order. It was very nicely organized. Aesthetics, right? I can notice these things right off the bat. I also noticed that the door, you can't see it, it got cut off, but the door was that pushy thing that holds it out. It was broken. And so I just kind of noted that down. Hey, I need to get the facility person in here to get that fixed. So I'm taking classroom climate. What are the kids doing? What are the parents, or if there's a parent in there, what's the parent doing? But what's the teacher doing? Where is she standing? What's her demeanor? What's the climate of the classroom? So there's two different things that you can do. You can either do a formal observation, or you can do informal observation. So let me talk to you about formal observations first. So what makes the difference between a formal observation and an informal observation? This is, I'm planning to come in, the teacher knows I'm coming in, we have a purpose in mind. This is a very, a more robust kind of evaluation. So when would you do these? Never do these before your teacher's had at least 6 weeks with their students. You know it takes about 6 weeks to make a routine. She should be training those little guys and those students, right? They should be getting into routine the first weeks of, 6 weeks of school. Please do not evaluate during this time, not formally. You can pop in all you want, but don't evaluate before your six-week mark. I tend to evaluate within the last 2 to 3 weeks. We're on trimester, so I'll come in the last 2 to 3 weeks of a trimester. The students have been in routine. They know the expectation. The teacher has a solid rapport, and they can move forward in that. So then they feel confident that they can present something that is well-polished. And that's what you want. You want them to be successful in their formal observations. How many? We have three trimesters, so I do three formal observations. And how often? Again, it's just once a trimester. And that piece for me, this is not my favorite part, the formal observation. But this is what goes in their record. This is what I'm reporting to the board. After I do the whole battery of them, then I write up a report. Teachers are at mastery. They're doing really well. I have this teacher that this was a concern, and here's how we're addressing it. It's a blurb in my head of school report to my board. I'll show you this, and then I'll come back. So this is an example of a formal observation. It's a rubric. Here's one of the goals. It says instructional organization and development. So these are the pieces that we're looking for, 4 being high, 3 being lacking. And so it says establishes objectives consistent with standards, or on the lacking end, chooses lessons in an abstract or random sequence. Well, how would you know that? You have to know the teacher's lesson. So one of the things, I'm going to flip back, is do you pre-conference? And to pre-conference means that you sit down with the teacher ahead of time, ask, hey, what are you going to teach about? What am I going to be seeing? Do you have anything that you're worried about, students that you're concerned with, any questions you have for me? Can you get that pre-conference in? I do it really informally. Sometimes I just say in an email, what's going on? I actually do not ask them for their lesson plan, because I should be able to see them, and this is our school culture, but I at any point in time should be able to go into our online system and look and see what they're teaching. So they don't need to send me the lesson plan because it should already be online. I can check it anytime. So what I tell my teachers is that the art of teaching looks like what I looked at for the pre-conference may not be what I saw. And I just expect you to share with me why. If they can give me a good why, it doesn't matter to me what I saw in the classroom versus what I saw on paper. I would rather know that they adapted a lesson to fit what their students needed at that moment and at that time, or what happened in the day before, so that the art of teaching is excellent. I would rather have that. So the pre-conference to me is less of an important piece than the post-conference. So I'll share with you. I'm going to flip ahead. So here's one formal observation. I might do this once a year, usually third trimester. How many of you are a little pressed at the end of the year for time? Yeah, me too. This is easy. I can just flip through and I can say, yep, you know, here's probably, they're probably going to be, I can run through this fairly quickly. But my first observation is always narrative. Do not let this next slide overwhelm you. Again, this is me. And my style, I do a formal observation that I timestamp everything. This is a Word document, 9:32, I walk in, the names have been changed. My teachers are all present, not in this room. But so I have Gemma's making her way to the front of the classroom. SS is rolling on the floor. I'm just timestamping everything I see, or what the teacher's doing, what the students are doing, what's on the wall, what's distracting me. I write it all down and I timestamp it, and you'll notice it's 9:32, it's 9:33, it's 9:36, and sometimes I'm shorthanding as I'm typing, and I'll go in and fill the blanks in so that I can remember all of the pieces. But this is a powerful tool, because as a coach, somebody who likes to be collaborative, when I go to a post-conference with this, I'll get this all typed out. And I don't email it to them. I go and I print it, and I pop it in their box. And I said, okay, when you come in for your one-on-one afterwards, please have read this, and then let's dialogue. This has no judgment in it. This feels judgmental, right? This is just timestamping. I am just observing, and this tool is so powerful, because a teacher will read through this and say, oh my goodness, I had no idea that student was doing that. They'll read through it. They said, really? Did I say it like that? Or did I not say, you know, what I was expecting? You know, they start recognizing in their own teaching, I thought I was doing this, but this is what it looked like, or this is what it sounded like. So if you are using Word, you can turn on comments. You can print this document beautifully with no comments. But if I am commenting on my own Word document, then the little pieces on the right-hand side, those pink boxes, remind me that I wanted to talk about something that might have some judgment to it, but I want to lead the teacher to recognize those pieces on her own or his own. So where it says Gemma asked kids to sit like Leo the lion, okay? And then she said she cannot start until everyone is sitting like Leo the lion. My observation was she kept teaching. The students were not all sitting like Leo the lion, and so I need to coach her to be able to do that. So that's my statement to myself to say, hey, when you said this, you did not expect it. And so sometimes I will go in and I'll do a sample. Here's what I expect it to look like. And demonstrate that for the teacher. But a lot of times, I've got fantastic teachers and they're like, oh, you're right. Or I'll have a teacher that gives an instruction from the back of the class and she's busy doing something and she, gives out an instruction and she's busy and then she passes things out and she gets to the front of the classroom. Well, whatever she instructed didn't happen. So I use a phrase called sticking point. So where's your sticking point in the classroom? For some teachers, it's at the front and center of the room. For some teachers, it's at their podium. For some teachers, it's at their technology stand. But wherever their sticking point is you say it and you mean it and you don't move on until it's done. So if I tell you to sit like Leo the lion to kindergartners, you have to be in your sticking point. So I should be looking at your eyes. I should be able to see every student. If I am giving an instruction about what page to open in the book so we're all reading together, the power of silence in an upper level class is powerful. So if I say, I want you to open to page 96. I'm just going to wait until everyone's ready to go. If I'm not seeing it, then I say, John, thank you so much for being on page 96 with me. I really appreciate your attentiveness. Power of the praise instead of calling on the other person who's not doing what they should be doing. Because student peer pressure for positive is way more powerful than calling attention and shaming or bringing attention to that negative behavior. If I do need to pull out a negative behavior, I am coaching teachers to walk over, get on eye level, especially with younger students. With an older student, I can walk by a desk and just lean over and say, I really need you on page 96, please. And it's quiet because I just need to be one-on-one with that particular student. Those are the pieces that I'm looking for in my teachers. And when I'm not seeing those pieces, I write them in the little comment boxes on the side to remind myself that this is what my thought is, but I am timestamping what I do see with no judgment in it as I'm walking through these observations. You can see there's a couple of pieces that are in bold that are not timestamped. Those are leading questions. So at the top it says, I can't wait for your tech cart to be ready. It would be immensely helpful for them to see the worksheet. How comfortable are you with using technology in the classroom? Open-ended question, non-judgmental. It opens a conversation that we can dialogue at the post-conference. Another one, I can see some students' feet are still not able to touch the ground. I wonder if we could get some smaller chairs for them and lower one or two tables. LL and SS especially, and probably BT. So I use initials of students instead of full names. So again, no judgment, but here's an action point, and then I will follow up. I'll come back in a couple days to make sure that teacher did that. So what do you do with this data? I said you can use it in your board report once a trimester. Our teachers are all, for example, they're all at proficient or excelled levels. I didn't have anyone with a level that's developing or lacking this trimester. For example, I could do something like that. If I was doing the narratives, I could say I got through all of my staff and we've all post-conferenced and had excellent dialogue. So those are the pieces that you can use the data. And then I just put it in their file, and I just keep it in a file in my office. Oh. And then what about that post-conference? I call them one-on-ones. I one-on-one with all of my direct reports once a week. And that is time-consuming and essential for success because we have a relationship. So they just have a standing appointment. And so for their next one-on-one, they come in and they bring their copy. I have my copy. And we dialogue about what happened in class and how are they doing. And we talk about those bold questions I put in there. I let them give kind of support for why something happened the way it happened. And that, for one thing, should happen again after you've already developed a relationship and that trust piece with the teacher. And then you can reinforce expectation after you start doing that. So once you do your first formal observation, then start back in saying, hey, did you get that fixed the other day? Or, hey, how's that tech cart looking? I'm wondering how you're using it. And so following up with those questions, and they can be just really quick dialogues. But for me, having the one-on-one scheduled every week with them, it's like 15 minutes. They come in. Usually my teacher know they bring in a post-it note or a little notepad. These are the questions I have for you. And then I try to have something from like an observation or a previous conversation where I might ask them a follow-up question. So those are the things that I use with the post-conference. Any questions so far on formal observations? Okay. I do one-on-ones with every direct report once a week. And during those, it is... If we've just done a formal observation, then we'll talk about the formal observation. I do formal observations once a trimester. Good question. Yes? So the question is about the seven laws and how do we build that in? That is going back to what do you value and what qualities of classical education. So for us, the passionate teacher, you know, is the first law. Are you passionate about your subject area? So if that is a driving concept for your school, then do incorporate the seven laws. You can create a rubric or a standard-based evaluation on the seven laws. So as you're walking through, that's a common language. I'm looking for these pieces. Again, that's a great way to build a formal observation for your school. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. He's asking, I'm doing these once a trimester, but what was it I do once a year? So I personally love the narrative. That's my style. And I'm doing the narrative every trimester. Once a year, last trimester, I do not do the narrative the narrative observation. I do the formal rubric that's more of a measurement tool. That's the last one I do. Correct. Okay. So on to informal observation. So I snapped this photo. I was on a field trip driving, and this teacher, we do service projects every month, and so the teacher is at her service project, and they just experienced something that was heavy on the kids' hearts. And so she stopped everything and just started praying. And to watch these kids praying for the people they had met and the hurt that they saw and the pain that was the reality at that moment was immeasurable. But that is part of an informal observation. And I've told my teachers, you are always being observed, whether it's by me or a parent in your classroom, another teacher you're teaching next to, the students in your room, when you're out on a field trip, you are always being observed. And this comes down to your hiring process. Do they fit your mission? And most of my teachers, I honestly, in my first couple years, struggled to evaluate because we were hiring such phenomenal teachers. I was like, you're great. I don't know how to help you right now. But this measurement tool of looking at our mission and saying, how can we do that and more. Just like we ask our students, like, yeah, you're doing really, really well, but what's the more? What's the deeper? And this piece is really amazing when a teacher uses the art of teaching and stops everything to say, let me address your heart. And that is a core value for our school. Our byline is teaching minds and training hearts, and they should be of equal value. So I call them walkabouts. My phone has a timer on it, and it says I need to get up from whatever I'm doing and go do my walkabout. I have them scheduled so that they're not the same time every single day. So I don't walk into every classroom at 9 o'clock every single day. So I want to see a variety of things, and so I've created a schedule where I make sure I see math once a week, I see reading once a week. I'll make sure that I get into my once a week teachers who come in, you know, like a specialist, so I can just pop in. This is where I do like the culture check, like a thermometer, and I just kind of come in. Sometimes I stand at the door. And I know I was listening to Matt Whitling earlier, and his students all stand, and immediately, as soon as he crosses the threshold. And for our school, our culture, I allow my teachers to make that decision. If they're in the middle of a spelling test, she's saying the word out loud, and I've entered the classroom, I don't want them to stop their train of thought. I want them to finish that. And if it's not a great time, then the teacher doesn't ask the students to say hello. And that is completely fine. And that way I can ebb and flow. The teachers know that if I'm there, they can ask their students to say, you know, hello, Mrs. Jones, and I can greet them. But if they're in the middle of something, I just tell them, keep doing what you're doing. Do not let me stop the flow of a conversation or the flow of a test. And so these walkabouts, I do them every single day. And it takes me about 10 minutes to get through the building. I might be in a classroom for about 2 minutes. Now, the teachers, even though I'm only in there for 2 minutes, they started coming to me, how did I do? Was I okay? Was it all right? Did you see anything? And so I had to develop a tool to let them know that all is well. And sometimes I'll walk around with just like a little postcard size piece of paper. I usually find the brightest or the most annoying color in the office. And I'll just keep it with me, and I'll just jot a note down. Loved how you presented that. Try to be really direct with my compliments. I don't say, nice job, smiley face. I really try to be direct with something I saw. I might ask a question. Looks like so-and-so is having a hard morning. Let me know if you need some help with that. You did a great job getting down to his level and addressing that. And I just leave it on the teacher's lectern or on their desk, wherever they're going to see it. And that way they're like, oh, okay, that was good. So they don't feel like they have to track me down and say, how was it? Was it okay? So again, I do these every single day, and I'm looking for certain things certain days. Otherwise, I'm not being intentional. So sometimes I go because I want to see what the kids are doing. Sometimes I go because I want to see what the teachers are doing. Sometimes I want to see the aesthetics of the classroom. My kindergarten classroom wall, for some reason this year, was repellent to all sticky items. So the alphabet never was properly aligned. And after, like, we used ticky-tack, we used blue ticky-tack, and then we used white ticky-tack, and then we used double-sided tape, and then we even used push pins. And everything, it just kept coming off the wall. And that was such a nuisance, and it was so minor, but kindergartners need to see the alphabet. And so we actually just went to letter strips on the desk, and we took down the alphabet that kept falling off the wall because it was such an eyesore to look at and a distraction. It wasn't excellent, and we talk about we want our schools to be excellent. We want our classrooms to be excellent. The aesthetics of that were not excellent. How many of you have teachers that are messies? How many of you have teachers that are cleanies? Mm-hmm. So how do you coach a messy to look like a cleanie? That's really hard. So coming in and asking questions. I love the question, tell me, because there's no judgment in it. So I might walk in, tell me how you expect your student's desk to look. See where I'm going? I would really love to see your desk surface clear at the end of each day. So I put an expectation in place, but I've already created the, they're probably aware where I'm going, because they also have the same clean expectation of their students. So I want them to model that. And it's great because the tell me opener allows them to talk, and usually they bring things up all on their own. And I did have a teacher who had no concept that she was not a cleanie. And so let me come in after school. I'll help you, and I'll kind of show you what I'm looking for. And so setting that precedent and giving affirmation when she was achieving that. Classroom libraries are notorious for being crazy at the end of the day. Is it your responsibility as a teacher or as a student responsibility? You know, helping teachers figure those little pieces out, help them have just that calmness of, okay, this is really minor, but it actually matters to my head, and so I want to work on this piece. Things where I'm looking for, is the teacher engaged, or do they have their head in the closet looking for their resource? Okay, so I'm just going to keep that in my little notebook mentally, that I'm going to keep that in my head while I'm walking, and I'm going to go back down and I'm going to write it in my journal. And then next time I do a walkabout, they're looking again for more resources. Oh, that's interesting. I'm just going to make a note of it again. And next time I'm walking through, okay, do they have their resources, or is this actually a consistent issue that I'm looking for? So third time I might say, in their coming one-on-one again, I wouldn't leave that note on their lectern and say, hey, looks like you're not prepared today. I would just let them come in and say, you know, tell me about what it looks like to get prepared for your class. Again, oh, this is what I do, da 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 da. Okay, they're oblivious, they have no idea that they're not prepared for class, or wow, I just can never seem to find my things. I'm always leaving something off. So I have two responses, and then where I go from there is the coaching piece. And again, coming alongside that teacher and saying, I want to see this. Would you like help with that? Or can I just check in on you later? And again, I'm willing to come in and help model that as a lesson. I'm willing to come in and help that be a resource. Or, oh no, I really get it. Thanks for pointing that out. One thing I see a lot with new teachers is parroting. They'll ask a question, a student will respond, and then they'll repeat exactly what the student just said, and it diminishes the value of that student statement. So these are things that you start watching for the more you see them and you recognize them. So that feedback piece is really important. So two examples. I was telling you, you know, sometimes you just use a sticky note and just write something on there. Other times I'm more intentional. I know these are tiny, but these are half sheets. Again, I can send you the original documents. These are two examples of informal observation. So one is open and narrative. I can just jot little notes down. The other one kind of has some boxes that I can check off. And the teacher gets the opportunity to kind of see what I'm looking for, because it's itemized. There's something to work towards. So sometimes I'll use these. I like to vary it because otherwise I get bored and then I'm not very intentional. And I like to vary it because then the teachers just get different kinds of feedback along the way. Okay, questions on informal observation? Blue shirt. That's great. So our teachers setting goals based on the informal observations. They are probably informally setting goals. Again, I one-on-one conference with my teachers every week, so that piece is a constant conversation with us, and so I can keep it on their one-on-one sheet and say, you know, how is that piece going for you? And until it's not a non-issue, and yet when we do the formal observations, then it can be a more clear goal. Yeah, I saw another question behind him. Yeah. Great question. I am in, let's clarify, I am in every full-time classroom every day. So I'm in my kindergarten, my first grade, my second grade, my third. I am in every full-time classroom every day. It's the specialists that I have to be more intentional about making sure I get into. And that can be a huge task. And I was with a principal, and she had 1,200 students in her classroom. She would literally change into her tennis shoes and would do her walkabout every day because she needs to be visible to her teachers, and then she was creating rapport with students. So I am in the classroom every day. It's 1 to 2 minutes, and it's fast. Yeah. Question in the back. We are preschool through eighth. Mm-hmm. Another question. Yes. That's a great question. He's saying all these different forms, is it confusing to the teachers? They use one consistently. And the answer to that is, it's not confusing because it's all the same language. It just looks different. So, for example, like the one on the left here is just highlighting key components that we're already looking for, and so the other one is just a checkbox. And I do tend to just write the notes. I find that, you know, coming to a workshop, I wanted to share other tools, but you'll find your niche, and for me, being able to use just a post-it note and write a note to the teacher is my go-to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll clarify, I do not use all these tools. These are resources that I've picked up, and I've used them until I can tailor and figure out what's my style. Yeah. So I would like to share some more evaluation tools with you. This is a picture of one of my preschool teachers, and this is our Christmas concert. And so, again, informal observation opportunity. She's on stage, which she's not really comfortable with about 40 preschoolers, and she's right in the middle of them because the little boy she's holding, he's 4, and he's my son, and he learned to walk this summer and at 4 years old, and so he is not stable on his feet. And he is standing on risers, and so she just walked up on stage with him, sat right behind him, and allowed him to stand as much as he could, and then put her hands behind him just to stable him when he was a little off balance. So for me, watching that, honoring to him, being able to be on stage when she was uncomfortable with it, I know she even dressed knowing that she might have to be on the stage, so she didn't wear a skirt. All of those pieces are informal observations that I'm doing, and I'm going to recognize them because they're important that the heart of the teacher is celebrated. And for me, I try to do these pieces, you know, one-on-one, but I also will collect them and highlight them maybe around Christmas time sometimes, or right before we'll go on a break at a staff meeting. And I'll say, you know, you're a pretty amazing team of teachers, and I want to compliment you, and I'm going to look you in the eye, and I'm going to say, I really appreciate how you did X, and I'm going to look at another teacher, I really appreciate how you did Y, and I appreciate, and I walk through the whole staff, and I will do that because they need to hear that they are appreciated, they need to hear that they're doing something that's notable. But not only that, it sets the example of, here's what I'm looking for, and I'm honoring you in front of your peers, because we know that just that peer praise and calling that out is powerful, a powerful motivator. And each person I can say something to, but I've collected those observations over the months. I'm going to show you a couple more things. And I wanted to share. This is not classical. It's not Christian. It's just a great tool. Sally Zepeda wrote this instructional supervision, applying tools and concepts. And it's got interesting text in it. But the one thing that I really appreciate about this is that it comes with downloadable resources. And so, again, looking for ways to communicate with my teachers. I want something that's going to create change. And when I was newer at this, when I didn't feel confident that I knew what to walk in and look for, the tools that were in here gave me ideas to springboard off of. So that is what I'm going to show you a couple examples. Question? Yes, Sally Zepeda. It's Z-E-P-E-D-A. Zepeda. So these are a couple of her samples that I want to share with you. So if I walk into a classroom and let's say I want to monitor teacher movement because one of our core values is you should be up and moving and engaging with your students. So for example, I know this is kind of cut off, but it comes with one that has like student, like classroom groups, a little diagram of the classroom, or you can just have a blank piece of paper. And again, this is where I'm like, wow, the teacher is not moved from her lecture in the entire time, and I really expect them to be moving and engaging with the students. So next time I'm going to come in, I'm going to start tracking what that teacher is doing. And so I'll drop the classroom really quick, and then I'll start drawing a diagram. I'll just like, okay, she went from here to here, and then she talked to that student, and then she talked to that student. And so I'm drawing a map of her movements for that time. And I might use it for a formal or an informal, and then say, hey, this is what I was noticing while you were teaching. What do you think? Tell me what you think. Tell me. See, you let them talk about it. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe I didn't move the whole 90 minutes, whatever. I'm never in for 90 minutes. But it allows them to see those pieces. Maybe I want to see how many times she's calling on students. Maybe only the front row is getting called on. I'm noticing it, but is she noticing it? Maybe she's calling specifically on the left side of the classroom, not the right side of the classroom, or only boys and not girls, you know, whatever that is. You're going to start noticing those things, but how do you communicate with them so that there's change? And this is a great tool, just draw a diagram of the classroom, and then you can track student movement, you can track teacher movement, you can track, you know, tally marks for how many times that student got called on. I contract with a university to do teacher observations for teachers that are becoming teachers. So it's very interesting to watch first-year teachers and how that looks like versus a master teacher. I love Bloom's taxonomy. And again, this is a core value of our school, so I use it like a rubric, and just I'll write down something the teacher did and then what level of thinking that achieved. And if it is all knowledge-based and I show it to the teacher, hey, I was in, this is what I was seeing, what do you think? Tell me about your lesson and what you wanted to accomplish. Do you think thinking on a knowledge-based level was achieving that? So you can put anything in those top, you know, where it says levels of thinking, you can put anything in there. You can put the 7 laws of learning in there. You can put your school's core values in there. And you can, oh, when you said this, that was example of this. When you said this, it was an example of this. If you don't write anything down because they're not giving you any good examples, then say, hey, I was looking for some of these things while you were teaching and I wasn't finding them. Let's talk about that lesson and how we could strengthen it. Another response form that's in there is verbal response. So we've talked, you know, you probably have heard about wait time. The teacher asks a question, and then they are supposed to wait for a few hands to go up, maybe wait a little bit longer so they get a better representation. So how many seconds did they wait? So what time was that? And then was were they giving a praise, a correction, or a preventative prompt in those pieces? So you go in, you're marking all these things down, you hand it back to the teacher. Hey, tell me what you think about this. Oh my goodness, I didn't praise a single student. That's terrible. I'm sure I did. Okay, let me come in again. I'll use this tool again. It's different response forms, and again, it's not confusing because we're looking for different things. But it all goes back to, what do you want your teachers to do? What are you looking for? What are your values for your school? And then just using different tools. Again, these are great for if you're trying to figure out your style. I don't use these a whole lot anymore because I've figured out what I'm looking for. Again, it goes back to our mission. I'm looking for classical. I'm looking for Christian. I'm looking for teachers who are passionate. I'm looking for teachers who use their parents to support them. And I'm looking for teachers that are creating dialogue and lessons that put the student at the center. So those are constantly on my mind because that's our mission and it's ingrained in me. And again, I've done this for 11 years now. I've created my own pattern and what I'm comfortable with. So this is a lot of different tools that you can tweak and you can use and you can personalize. I say I'm a better pirate than an originator. So please use these things, make them yours. And again, I've done these long enough that I just always go back to this. And I can type really fast, I can get all my notes in, and I'm observing and I'm typing. And that piece is really the most powerful for me. But I just want to encourage you, there's a phrase that I learned that says, you can inspect what you expect. So if you expect something from your teacher, you should be inspecting it. If you aren't inspecting it, you're not going to see it because there's not an accountability piece. So again, please email me. I know I have about 15 more minutes by design because this is it was intended to be a workshop that's practical. So I did throw a lot of ideas out. But I hope that you hear that my goal is to give you resources so that you can personalize it, so that your evaluations reflect who you are as a leader and will help make change for your teachers. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Oh, I didn't. Sorry, I'm following my notes that were submitted in January to Tom Spencer. Let me talk just briefly about peer observation. This was a happy accident. I was really, really busy one year, and there was absolutely no way I was going to get second trimester observations done. And so what I ended up doing is creating a peer evaluation where they went into each other's classrooms during a prep time and watched a peer teach. And they could ask two questions while they were in there. And I said, here's your paper. You're looking for two things. What do you wonder? And what did you like? And then at our next staff meeting, everybody came and shared, I really liked seeing this in your classroom. I was wondering how you did such and such. And so the I wonder statement and then obviously the what I liked statement were really powerful. Again, non-judgmental, but it really gave my staff a way to bond together that I really want to know how that teacher uses her technology. She just has such amazing lessons that the kids talk about, or how do you do your circle time, or what was that discussion that you were having? I'd love to foster that in my classroom. So they ask one another if they can come in and do peer observations, and sometimes I'll say we're going to do peer observations, and sometimes it's just something they're asking of each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you create alternate tools in evaluations? So when you come in, whether it's prepared or announced, the teacher doesn't change, they don't feel intimidated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's great. So how do I create a positive culture before I come in to evaluate? Being able to be in their classroom once a day really makes a huge difference. And setting up that piece where I really appreciated this, I like how you're doing that. And it's that time on the front end, and especially in those first 6 weeks, just being visible and being present. So that I'm not behind my desk all the time. I'm in and about, in the classrooms and seeing them. And then the one-on-ones really make a big difference. Being able to just touch base with them. They have my undivided attention for about 15 minutes once a week. They come in my office and I just kind of ask questions. So and then they can ask me questions. So we're creating that trust relationship on the front end. So when I come in and do the observation, I tell them, I want to see amazing things because I know what you're capable of. And I expect that observation to be amazing. I do. And I recognize they're going to do kind of the dog and pony show for it. But that's okay because I can see what they're capable of at the high. And every day does not have to be at that level. And they know that from me. So they don't have to put on their best face. And so over the years, my teachers have become accustomed to me in and out of the classroom. They don't have the anxiety. My first year teachers feel that anxiety their first year because it's the first time that they're experiencing this. My other teachers welcome me in. They ask me to come in. Hey, could you come in and watch this lesson? Because they want me to have feedback. Or can you come help me with so-and-so? I'm not quite sure how to engage that or that attitude. Or, you know, how would you shape this piece? And so they're inviting me into classrooms a lot of times now. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. I use Sign Up Genius. It's real high quality, free, online Sign Up Genius. And so I put a schedule in. These are my 2 weeks I'm doing formal observations. Sorry, the question is, do I let teachers sign up for their observations, for formal observations? And the answer is yes. I want to see their very best for formal. And so on Sign Up Genius, I put in my calendar for 2 weeks, and they sign up for a slot. And then I come in and watch for that. Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Well, great. Okay, yes. My teachers do self-evaluations at the end of the year, and so they write their own. And I say, please use your formal observations throughout the school year, things that we've been talking about that identify some things that you've done really well, some things that you'd like to set up. But again, we go back to those five core components and measuring themselves against those pieces. And they're their best critic, really. They're going to be harder on themselves than I typically will be. And they'll set new goals for themselves. And then we use those driving forward into the next year. And even had some of my staff here this week just going to classes specifically and trying to just shape those things to go deeper so that they're more capable and stronger in those areas. Good question. Yes. Great question. Do I use a form for putting a teacher on probation? We have a formal policy for writing up a teacher. And so yes, there is, and that goes directly to the board. And the teacher does have to sign the formal on probation document. And if they choose not to sign it, then for us, it's grounds for termination if they don't want to sign it, or we have a witness come in to sign that piece. Yes, it is an improved form by the board. Mm-hmm. Good question. Excellent. Well, thank you, everyone, for your spending an hour with me this afternoon. Please use my email address if you need any resources or have any questions. Mm-hmm.